Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill.
Proudly sponsored by B. Braun, a world-leading provider of healthcare solutions.
Hello, I'm Luke O'Neill, and welcome to my podcast, Show Me the Science, where every week I take a topic in science. We've had a fair few now. I hope you're still with us, and if you're just joining, you're very, very welcome. And they're topics that I just find interesting as a scientist that I come across in my reading. I am obsessively into science. You see, I keep reading all the science journals, Science, Nature, every magazine that has a science section. I will devour it. It's a bit sad, I suppose. But then I find things, oh, wow. That's interesting. Now, normally I'd be in a pub, you see, telling my mates and boring them with this, but I've got you to listen to the podcast. It's great. And I hope you get something from it. So the stuff I find, I hope, is of interest to you. Now, this week, well, it's the subject of so many science fiction movies. We all want to know about the science of artificial intelligence. And my two favourite, actually, science fiction things on this, I have to say, is HAL in 2001, A Space Odyssey. Remember that computer? That was really intelligent.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Open pod bay doors, Hal, as the guy said. And Hal fought back against the crew, and there was all kinds of aggro in that movie with Hal.
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize.
Because Hal was IBM. You know, one letter removed from IBM. That's where the name Hal came from, in case you don't know. They were real nerds. And then, of course, my favorite, though, beyond Hal, is Data. In Star Trek, that is an artificial intelligent being.
I have access to the Borg subspace signals. Processing.
Fully sentient, you know. We all wonder, will we ever get to those sorts of robots, we would call them, that would be like Data. They'd be our friends, wouldn't they? And we're getting closer all the time. And in fact, I'm going to talk about transhumanism, which is a bit like the Borg that was in Star Trek, where you get a kind of human-machine interface to do with intelligence and so on. So it's really been a mainstay of so much science fiction. But remember, it's a really interesting area. It's supercomputers. It's things like Siri, you know, when you talk to your computer in all kinds of ways. It's machine learning. It's driverless cars. I mean, if there's one area, if you're young and you're listening, to get into, it's artificial intelligence, because we know already it's here in many ways, with a lot more to come. It's really the science of supercomputers, I suppose, is what they call it as well. And you would use it every day. Every time you open up your iPhone with face recognition, that's AI, because it's able to look at your face and figure out who you are, for example, you know. And every time you do a search with Google, that's getting to the quick things quickly, you know, and bringing up things using artificial intelligence as well. So in many ways, it's here now. But it goes back a good few years. I mean, the term was coined, I guess, over 50 years ago now. And again, as I always say, we must have definitions. What is artificial intelligence? It is a machine. They use the word machine, or a device that can perceive the environment and take actions to maximize goals. That's what artificial intelligence is. Let's take face recognition. That device that is perceiving your face, then taking an action based on that recognition. What's the action? Open your iPhone and start using it. So that's what artificial intelligence really is. Very elaborate, that face recognition technology, by the way. And we also kind of define it as machines, but it's what's called cognitive functions, which means they can learn. And what makes artificial intelligence especially interesting is if the machine can learn and get better at doing things as it goes along. And search engines kind of do that. It'll keep sending things to you. Once a search engine realizes your interest, it'll tailor then its response to that's learned from that encounter. You know, problem solving is part of this, and getting better and better as it does different things, and the speed of a thing will go up based on learning. You know, another great example is understanding human speech. And in fact, that's a big application, is that when you speak into a device, can it now produce a text based on that? Can it translate it? The more you speak into the device with your voice and your intonation, it learns to recognize your voice, and because you can voice activate things as well in that way. So learning from doing these things is really important. And a great example that really revolutionized, I suppose, the field in some ways was strategic efforts. So in other words, judging strategy in various ways. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, the machine that can beat a human at chess.
It wasn't looking good for the world champion in a match that many expected him to win. Of the two contestants, only Kasparov could feel the tension and nerves that went with the occasion. If he lost, it would be a landmark in both the worlds of chess and of science. And that's exactly how it turned out.
That's a very strategic game. Or very importantly, Go was another one that was extremely important. The first time that happened, that woke up the world to AI.
Legendary Go player Lisa Doll, widely considered one of the world's best, just retired from the game, saying that powerful artificial intelligence programs, such as AlphaGo, can play the game at a level human players cannot.
That a machine could do what a human could do with a very strategic, elaborate game like Go. So that really got people's attention. And then, as I say, self-driving cars is the big one. Back to that a little bit later. Now, it begins in 1955. We do like to give a bit of history. If you're a scientist, actually, if you want to understand something, when I have a new project in my lab, I'll often go back to the very first description and then build it up from there. Because it's one way to learn it for a start. And you can see how discoveries then advance, you know. So with this one, 1955, they reckon is the starting point in all this. Got John McCarthy.
Well, I see no limit short of human intelligence. Then with faster machines, one could do the equivalent that a human could do in a short time, in a very long time.
Coins the term in a paper, and then he publishes that paper in 1956. That's the start of this in many ways. And then scientists at MIT in the US and IBM company begin to work on this more and more. By the mid-60s, the Department of Defense in America starts funding AI massively, huge investment. We need money to do research. Why would the Department of Defense do it? Well, they want to make robots, don't they? And automate everything in various ways. So they invest a huge amount of money in this. So really it began in many ways with, you know, investing in weapons, I suppose, and armaments and so on. But a very important founding father, if you will, was Alan Turing, and I guess many have heard of him now. He laid down the theoretical basis for this, and some of his early papers were on the theory of computation. He was the guy who clearly said using zero and one, you can simulate any kind of mathematical deduction, is what he began with. And that's the basis for the digital world, is 0-1. So he really is seen as someone who got people thinking. He didn't do any experiments. He didn't make a robot, really. I mean, he did make some devices here and there. But his main contribution was theoretical, that it would be possible to use various sort of mathematical logic and to develop a thinking machine, I suppose, and Turing machines, that term was then coined. But then, of course, beyond the theory, then they had to invent devices and make things. Engineers got involved. And a big advance was the metal oxide semiconductor, or MOS, that was invented, and transistor technology was used as well, and in the very large scale integration, VLSI. So if you want to impress someone, whenever you go back to meeting people again, just say MOS VLSI, and then they go, oh, that guy knows the artificial intelligence, the MOS VLSI technology. Anyway, that turned out to be a key part of the history. That, though, gave rise to a thing called Deep Blue. You may have heard of that. And that Deep Blue AI device won at chess, and when that happened, people's minds were blown. And then IBM had a really elaborate AI device called Watson, and that won a thing called Jeopardy.
Our three players have made their wagers. The category is 19th century novelists, and here is the clue.
Which was a quiz show.
Watson.
Who is Michael Phelps?
Yes,
Watson. Go. What is The Last Judgment?
Correct. Go again.
Watson. Who is Jean Valjean?
Correct.
And again, that got people's imagination that these artificial intelligence machines could do what humans could do in a way. Now, all that technology is there now. I mentioned already the various things. And the Xbox 360 and the Xbox One, you'd all be familiar with those. They're using AI technology that was devised in a way from those early efforts. So in many ways, when you're on your Xbox, it's the American military that funded that technology. I hope you still play it, you keep playing it. But that technology really came from the American Army investment in these things. And then, of course, Google get involved, and we all know that. Skype was a key advance, actually, that technology, because that was a very important development as well. And again, what Skype can do, well, I mean, mind you, Skype is getting less prominent now, I guess, but Skype was a key add-on too. And a really important early effort in all this was to do translations. Natural languaging processing, I think called GPT-3 was devised, that can translate as well as any human. And that was an obvious one. And we can do this on our phones now, can't we? Of course, sometimes translation doesn't quite get it right because there is a cultural part to translating things as well. But in general terms now, there's no need to learn a language. I hate to say this, even though they teach French and German in school. The machines have got so effective at translating, we're right now at the Babel fish idea, the famous science fiction thing where you stick a thing in your ear and it instantly translates things. And that's using artificial intelligence to do that. And that really would be one big application. Now, another one that I want to mention before I go on to what the future might look like is DeepMind. Remember, that was a big development. And literally just a few months ago, the DeepMind Alpha program was able to figure out the 3D structure of proteins. Now, you might see, why is that important? Well, getting the structure of a protein, if you're a biochemist, is extremely important. These proteins are very complicated things. If you know their shape, you can design drugs to target them. And that might be an enzyme in a disease. It might be a receptor. Let's talk about ACE2 for COVID-19, for instance. You can now see them in 3D. To do it before DeepMind, you had to get crystals to grow, and it took ages. Computers can now read proteins and get their shape. That was a massive advance, and it's a huge thing for drug discovery. And again, that was using artificial intelligence, very importantly. And I guess I might also mention facial recognition. I've said it earlier. That's now 99% accurate. And therefore, we can use it for things like our iPhones as a way of looking at shape. And it's a bit like the protein structure thing in a way. It's all about shape. And very elaborate shape recognition in your face or in proteins is what artificial intelligence is all about in sensing these things. And again, I guess we're seeing them in many, many different applications. But now, let me move on to what the future might look like. Of course, we're frightened of this at one level. Because will it create massive unemployment? Now, the evidence is it won't, because every time a new technology was invented, jobs were lost, but new jobs were invented. I mean, when horses began to be not used anymore for transport and cars came along, there was a big fear, all the people who breed horses and train them and all that. But again, massive car industry emerged. So we're not that concerned about unemployment coming because of the robots, let's put it that way. And in many ways, when we talk about transhumanism, which is enhancing human activity using AI, there's a great phrase, AI is the next stage of human evolution in many ways. And everybody has got on board with this. So the Chinese are spending $3 billion a year on AI because they know we've got to invest in this and get better and better examples of the utility of it. There's a Buddhist monk in Beijing that's a robot. It's called Zhang Er, and it's just as good as a human robot. You can go up to this Buddhist monk, you can talk to it, pray to it, it'll give you advice, and it's a robot, you know, and it's using artificial intelligence. And again, it seems to learn. If you talk to it for a while, it can tailor its responses to you as an individual, which is incredible. And then the EU, of course, is watching this closely. In 2020, the EU produced a big position paper on AI. It said we must invest in this, and it listed the main goals: improved healthcare, things like diagnosis. Machines can now read, you know, samples, say tissue sections where pathologists would read it. Now machines can do it. Prevention, giving advice to people, and of course, ultimately treatments. So the future of medicine is really artificial intelligence. Another big one is to make farming more efficient. Can you do things with agriculture using AI? And that, of course, will mitigate against climate change, because these are very complicated things. To diagnose a disease is extremely complicated for a human to do anyway. That's why so many years are spent doing medicine in university. But effectively, a machine could look at all the signs and symptoms and then come up with a way to treat diseases. And of course, the big one is driverless cars. We're not there yet. Very close now to having driverless cars everywhere. It's taken a bit longer than we thought. But a robot could easily drive a car by sensing the environment and, you know, changing and adapting and using its intelligence. So there's no doubt driverless cars will be a really big one that will come along. But of course, people then talk about the dangers. And will the robots take over the world, all that kind of territory, you know? And will us humans be effectively be transhumanism, because we'll have a computer attached to our brains to help us do all these things? And we've all seen science fiction movies along those lines. It is going to come. I mean, the rate of research is absolutely staggering. Now, COVID has held things up a little bit, of course, but look, you know, this is all going to happen. We've kind of cracked the way to do it in a way, and it's getting better and better all the time. But what are the worries? Well, Stephen Hawking, he was a famous one for worrying about this. He said, once the robots are here, they'll learn and they'll take over and they'll beat us, you know.
The development of full artificial intelligence could spell the end of the human race. Once humans develop artificial intelligence, it would take off on its own and redesign itself at an ever-increasing rate. Humans, who are limited by slow biological evolution, couldn't compete and would be superseded.
And the great example of this was a robot that was programmed to make paper clips. They had this as kind of a thought experiment. Let's say you had a robot and its only instruction was to make paper clips. It would take over the whole world. It would kill us off because we're in the way of making paperclips. It would turn every piece of metal on the planet into a paperclip, and it wouldn't stop until the whole mission is completed. Because remember, the function of AI is to maximize goals. Now, you know, we can put safeguards into this, I suppose, but still, you never know. We got to be careful, and it's something to keep an eye on, I suppose, is the way to think of it. But I'm not that worried. If a robot did turn up into my office to make a paperclip, I would bash it on the head, wouldn't I, to stop it making the paperclip potentially. But so there are ways to control this. But still, it is a philosophical question that would they eventually, you know, take over, I suppose. And that, again, is the source of science fiction. But let me finish with one really great example where AI has been used to great effect to help us. And again, I know I mentioned COVID a lot, but I can't resist this one because it's such a great example. They decided to deploy a supercomputer to tackle COVID-19. Now, by tackle, I mean look at all the data, analyze all the science, learn from the science, and for God's sake, give us an answer as to how we're going to beat it. This was a supercomputer at Oak Ridge. It was the US Department of Energy as the second biggest computer in the world. Now, by big, I mean having massive memory, massive parallel capacity, huge, big, basically thinking machine, if you will. It's called Summit, is the name of this. It's being used for assessing energy, you know, and climate change and the complexities of energy on Earth and all that kind of thing. But they let it run for a week. They gave all this information to Summit. They gave 40,000 genes from 17,000 gene signatures from all these patient samples. A huge amount of data from patients was fed in. This machine performed 200 quadrillion calculations per second. Now, don't ask me what a quadrillion is. All I know is it's a very, very big number. And it ran for a week, chewing on the data, thinking about it, I suppose, all that genetic information from patient samples and all kinds of things. It actually looked at 2.5 billion pieces of information over time from all the data that we had. Now, a human could have done this. It would have taken years. And at the end of this, it said a very important factor that's disturbed in COVID-19 is a protein called bradykinin. Now, bradykinin is made by the immune system during infection, and it drives inflammatory events in the lungs. It causes fluid to build up, and that damages the lungs. It causes blood clotting. Now, of course, these are well-known features of COVID anyway, but now bradykinin comes out of this analysis as a great thing to target. And guess what? There are trials running now with drugs that will block bradykinin. So if this machine is correct, and why wouldn't it be? COVID-19 is a disease that really harms you by your body going into overdrive and making too much bradykinin. And that is causing all the damage. Block it, you might save lives because you'll stop all the damage from bradykinin. It's too much bradykinin. Again, the computer can't tell you why there's too much bradykinin. All it said is this data points towards bradykinin. The virus must be driving bradykinin. That could not have happened without that supercomputer. Now, that gives you a great example of AI. And you can see now we can use this in lots and lots of different ways. We may stop climate change by using AI to tell us what to do. So in many ways, we're going to use this technology to help us, to inform us in various ways and stop us basically from either destroying the Earth or saving us against a horrible pandemic. And we're going to see more and more examples of AI being used to benefit humanity. So thank you for listening, and I hope you got some information from that. And don't forget, my podcast is out every Thursday. Please download it and sign up for it. And you can hear me every week with Pat Kenny. Thank you very much.
Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill.
Proudly sponsored by B. Braun. Saluting our frontline heroes for their outstanding commitment to the health of the nation.